All right, friends, welcome back. Another episode of the podcast. This is one of, I honestly think this is one of my favorite things to do on the podcast, is just to talk to Noah, our producer, and kind of talk about current events, what's going on, and really just shoot the shit. I mean, it's just nice to do that. So, Noah, it's good to see you.
Thanks, man. This one's been a long time in the making with all of the Wi-Fi problems we had.
Well, whose Wi-Fi problems, Noah?
Yeah, I know. We tried to film this episode last week, and my Wi-Fi kept dropping the call every like 30 seconds. So
it happens. You know, to be fair, my internet in my house, we have to go through Xfinity. They're a pretty large provider. It's not that great. I even when I record interviews, it drops like in the middle. I have to edit that in post, so it could be a pain. But anyway, the point is that it's good to have you on. It's good to be with you again and to talk. And friends, of course, this episode of the podcast brought to you, of course, by Mad Priest Coffee, one of our favorite coffee roasteries out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you want to try out their coffee, go to their website, link in our bio, madpriestcoffee.com. Put in TNE20 in the promo code and get 20% off your order. Honestly, we say that every time because they are a sponsor of the show. They send me free coffee, which is great. But I love their branding. Their most recent promotional video is hilarious. So I recommend going to their Instagram, Mad Priest Coffee, and checking it out. And if you like their stuff, buy some coffee, support their company. They do great work. So I wanted to make sure we said that. But, you know, no, it's interesting. It's been, I feel like the way my mind works is I'll be doing my normal new evangelical stuff, and I'll be like, oh, write that down and talk about with Noah. Oh, write that down and talk about with Noah. Then I don't write it down, and then we get to the recording, and it's like, oh, right, I know I had like some pretty big topics to talk about with Noah.
Right.
But today I did write the big ones down. So we awesome. Do have a lot to get to today. I feel like since we're recording on a Wednesday, and I'm hoping we can get this podcast out, well, probably not today because you said that you're recording a band today, but maybe tomorrow. Hopefully before the end of the week for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do want to bring some levity to the audience out there. All right. I want to bring some humor. And if you want the full context, I will just say right now, you want to go to our Instagram channel and watch the video that is titled "How Dare You." It has a picture of Mark Driscoll in the thumbnail. Okay. That's what I'm sourcing this from. So, all right. I hope audience out there, you're listening closely because this is hilarious. So we all have come to know, I wouldn't say love, but we all have come to know and just recognize that Mark Driscoll is one of the people in this spaces that we consistently critique, and it's not for no reason, right? There are good reasons why we critique Mark Driscoll. Most of the audience is aware of who Mark Driscoll is. If you don't know, long story short, he's one of the most abusive, narcissistic pastors in my lifetime in the evangelical circles I grew up in, right? Yeah. So maybe not the worst person ever to walk the face of the planet, but certainly by evangelical standards, he is kind of, he has gone down in infamy for kind of building this massive church, having a massive fall, and then rebuilding his own church despite 40 elders signing a statement saying he's not qualified to lead. And Christianity Today did a, what is it, 10, 15 part series?
I think there's like 30 now. They're still going.
They did a very long series documenting the fall and the abuse of Mark Driscoll. Okay, so he's not a great person. He hung out with Elijah Schaefer, who is really a white supremacist, has said some crazy things. Again, you can go to our Instagram and see the content. We do our best to show you that we're not making this stuff up. But he's all about, you know, this critical theory, his doctrine of demons. He's that kind of person, right? He's kind of establishing himself in those spaces. So anyway, so I say all this because Mark is known to be one of these like, oh, we have to fight cancel culture, while he blocks anyone who he doesn't like. All right, you say the wrong comment, you even ask a question on his Instagram, bam, you're blocked. Like it's a joke, and it all came. Oh man, what has happened recently is such, it's poetic justice. So Mark Driscoll posts a picture of himself, and it's like a picture of him kind of like squinting, like looks like he's crying or grunting, and okay. and it says on the picture, caption this. So he's asking people, right, to poke some fun at Mark Driscoll. And the internet, bro. Oh my God. The internet did not disappoint. I'm seeing if I, you know, I should have, this shows how professional we are. I should have show prepped this and had the picture ready to go.
Man, I gotta but see this.
I'm gonna, hold on, let me find it. Do I have it here? I know I do. I wanna share some of the comments that were going around. You know, I don't think my iPhotos on my, or my photos updated on my computer, so I don't think I have it just yet. But anyway, people were just going to town. I mean, they were just roasting him. It was actually, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the Instagram site and find it. I know.
Yeah, what I'm too curious about this.
All right, hold on. What's the name of the site?
Okay, plus, I think at this point, getting blocked by people like Mark Driscoll or Nathan Finocchio is just a rite of passage in our space. So take it as a compliment, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I was blocked eons ago. All right, so here we go. So the caption is, or on Mark's post, it says, caption this, right? And so his version of, like Mark's own version was, she's a 10, but she uses the message translation. Okay, very funny, Mark. So people in the comments, here's just a few. He's a 10, but yells, who do you think you are when you're listening to Sticks and Stones? When he's a, okay, caption this. When you sell the book you author to the church you pastor, make a ton of money, become a New York Times bestseller, and then realize you kind of committed a fraud to get there. He's a 10, but has the nerve to give a sermon about toxic church people. He's a 10, but ... He's Mark Driscoll. Oh my gosh. 10, but emotionally abuses the church for profit. I mean, they just went to town, okay?
It's amazing.
So Mark is blocking people left and right. And then Epic Christian Memes, a large memes account in our circles, just comments, be careful, Mark, what you wish for. He deletes that comment. Like, Mark deletes the comment and blocks Epic Christian Memes, okay? And this becomes a whole thing. And then Mark releases a video on his account, like, poking fun at Epic Christian Memes, pretty much saying, like, you know, I'm not on, he goes, you know, me, Mark, I'm not on the internet, so I don't know what's going on, but I've been told A, B, C, D, and E. And at one point he goes, thanks, Epic Christian Memes, for shouting us out because we grew by hundreds of followers. Dude, the guy's a liar. He grew by, like, all right, his account went from 66,000.3 followers to 66,000.4 followers. Okay, that's his version of hundreds of followers. So, of course, I made a reel unpacking this and just bringing to everyone's attention how, like, you know, culture warrior William Wallace, hyper-masculine Mark Driscoll has the world's most fragile ego to the point where, get ready, he turned off the comments on the caption post. He did. He turned off the comments. The guy posts, captioned this, gets offended by the comments, and turns them off.
Which, if you're Mark Driscoll, what do you expect to be your comment section?
You expect? And also, like, does it not show how fragile this dude's ego is? Mm-hmm. Like, this guy makes a living. Real faith, strong men. Roar. Men should lead their wives. I'm a big, strong man. I mean, and then this happens, and he turns off the comments because his little frail, fragile ego, his literal snowflake ego, right? I mean, just got completely, I don't know, I guess he couldn't take it. Culture warrior Mark, I mean, here's the headline hilarious. I would write. Culture warrior Mark Driscoll surrenders to cancel culture.
That's awesome. Oh, man.
So you can go to our Instagram and see the actual reel. It's a little more organized than my rambling I just gave you all. But honestly, like, it is so... Mark Driscoll, you have to wonder, is he a paid actor? I mean, I know Alex Jones, right? You know, he got... he was found liable for defamation for saying terrible things about Sandy Hook, right? And his big thing is that everything is a paid actor. But if there was a paid actor scenario in the world, I mean, maybe it's Mark Driscoll because the way he acts, it is larger than life. It is like a movie. It is crazy.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Oh, my goodness. It. So I wanted to start off. I wanted to kick us off, Noah, on that, you know, note.
Of That's just, good. We need something positive in our lives right now.
Mark, he literally turned off his own comments. I mean, hilarious. Dude, just delete the post then. Like, why keep it up? Why keep up with a caption this post and turn off the comments? Like, you are that is a very dumb thing to do. That's all I'll say about that.
He's really meeting up to that standard of, like, unemotional masculinity right there. Taken down by a meme comment. that he asked for.
Exactly. Oh, these pastors, man, like the Mark Driscolls of the world, not every pastor, everyone, okay, just so we're clear, but these like Mark Driscoll types, these, you know, mega church types, their egos are so fragile, man. They can't take criticism. I've talked to other pastors like the Mark Driscoll type. They will not engage. They will not respond. They won't answer my questions. I mean, I'm not going to drop his name yet because I'm still working on it, but there was a guy that posted about... Again, a megachurch pastor posted how parents should be really concerned about bringing their kids to see the Buzz Lightyear movie because it features two women and, you know, a married lesbian couple kissing in it, which, by the
scandalous.
Way, I watched the movie. There is one like 5-second peck on the lips, okay?
If you're a kid, you don't even notice that happens. It's like in the background of the scene.
You know, you would think that, no, but my 2-year-old, he's gay now, so it worked.
Oh, yeah. Wow. They got to him.
They got to him. But anyway, so he posts this thing, and I respond, like, pretty polite, but also, like, this is ridiculous. And we go back and forth, and the guy eventually he turns off comments in his... And his reasoning was people weren't, like, they were saying mean things, like they were cursing in the comments, which is not true. He was just mad because I called him out, right? And then I ended up retweeting him again, and I said, dude, come on the podcast. Like, I will talk to you. I am willing to have a good faith dialogue to discuss our differences. Let's talk. He finally goes, okay, email me. That was 3 weeks ago. I never heard back from him. I called him out again on Twitter saying, dude, are you going to respond to me? And so far it's, I was on vacation or I was away. I'll talk to my team to see the best steps forward. I'm like, of course you're going to do that. Of course you're going to check with your team because it's all fake. Like, these people are groomed to be a certain kind of celebrity personality, and they have teams making sure that they can never be touched or never be critiqued or never lose an argument. They always have to be right. And so it's just so frustrating to deal with this because these people have one-way streets. Sorry to rant, everyone, and Noah. Thank you for listening to me. But I'm just saying, like, these pastors have one-way streets. They can tell you how to live your life. They can tell you what the quote-unquote truth of God's word is. They can tell you, you know, whether you should watch a Buzz Lightyear movie or not. But once you push back, once you call out, hey, maybe you're not right on this, they shut down because they don't have any capacity for actual dialogue. That is give and take, where it's like, hey, you know what? Maybe that's a great point. Maybe I should rethink this. No, that can't happen because in evangelical spaces, evangelical leaders are taught that repentance is not a thing for them. Sure. It is just lead some more, and then ignore the haters because they're always wrong. And here we are. That's how we get Mark Driscoll.
Yeah, and you see a little bit of that too in you watched the Hellstone documentary, right?
Oh, did
you see this kind of like thing where people are sort of raised up to be this cultural icon, but then they're not really even given the tools to succeed pastorally in that role because they're sort of just taught the influencer marketing side of being a spiritual guru. And so then there's just no room when you get called out. There's no room to even understand what's going on with the accountability.
That's right. That's right, because they view accountability as an attack. And listen, to be fair, when I first entered this like deconstruction space, you know, and some people called me out, it didn't feel good. I felt embarrassed, I felt humiliated, but I had to change my attitude and go from, you know, I can't be held accountable to accountability and repentance is a gift to do better. Right. And that shifted how I viewed that for me. Like that's how I really went from like, ooh, this feels uncomfortable to I'm not perfect at it, but I'm getting better at embracing, right, these moments where someone's like, hey Tim, what you just said was A, B, C, D, and E. And instead of me going, well, you're wrong, you know, you're dumb, I know better, it's well, what can I learn here? Because repentance lets me make maybe my crookedness, right? Like my participation in the crookedness of the world, it helps make that part of it maybe a little bit better. Right. So that's the difference here. But like you said, Noah, so well, this celebrity pastor culture in particular, it's designed to not have that because accountability is seen as a sign of weakness. Admitting wrongdoing is a sign of weakness. Yeah. Right. And here we are.
Yeah. And even more than that, I think in the larger scheme of what we're kind of witnessing in evangelical culture, and this is something I experience a lot in my personal relationships with friends and family and the conversations I have with them, is that there is ingrained into that culture such a fear of giving up any ground.
Yes.
That there's sort of like this idea of defending the faith, the apologetical world has sort of trained us to believe that if we change our mind on anything, it's somehow a loss of of orthodoxy, a loss of Christ-likeness. Even if it's the simplest thing, like a movie, whether or not we should watch it. Everything is like an end-all conversation. You know, everything is sort of platformed as, you know, this most dramatic choice you have to make in your life to choose Jesus or choose Satan. And it strips all of the nuance out. I'm being really dramatic about that. But it strips so much of the nuance out of those conversations and the possibility of accountability in those relationships and in those conversations.
Yes, especially because they're really based in hierarchical structures, right? So the pastor is the top dog. Sure. The pastor is the leader, and people at the top of that chain cannot be critiqued by people on the bottom of the chain because, right. I don't know, that's Marxism or something. You know, like that's how that's how they kind of get there, right? Is like, oh, sure. We can't talk about power structures because power structures, if we admit that they exist, which of course they do, then we have to admit that if we're at the top of that power structure, we could be part of the problem, right? Misusing our own power to actually commit harm. So they can't have, even if they wanted to have a lens for that, they are incapable of having it because it would automatically start critiquing them because so many of them are at the top of the power food chain. Does that make sense?
Sure. It puts them in a very vulnerable position.
Exactly. And I also think there's a connection here. I think this is actually, I mean, if I was a pastor, I would say it's a beautiful segue, but you know, I'm not a pastor, thank heavens. But there is a connection here to what we saw recently with the FBI search warrant execution of Trump's residence. Are you aware of this, Noah, of what happened here?
Yeah, I've been following that.
Yeah. So, you know, just a kind of quick TLDR, basically what you need to know is that the FBI executed a search warrant at President Trump's resort in Florida looking for potentially classified documents that he had in his possession that he wasn't supposed to have. This is the first time I'm aware of that a president has had a search warrant executed, or a former president has had a search warrant executed. So it's certainly an unprecedented situation. Sure. But of course, Trump is kind of, I don't know, an unprecedented president. and of course, right away, you saw the Christian nationalist, conservative evangelical machine really go right into full-on defense mode because, again, they can't admit wrongdoing, right? So there is an overlap here of, well, we can never admit that we elected the most corrupt president in the history of our country who legitimately tried to overthrow our election process. So we'll do everything we can to either try and throw mud on like Hunter Biden or talk about Hillary Clinton still, or we'll make up an alternate reality where what you say happened, despite all the evidence, never happened. So for example, it also shows too how, again, I don't want to be too critical, you know, but when it comes to Christian nationalism, I'm going to be critical because of how dangerous I believe it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? You know, pro police, back the blue, law and order person. She tweets out when this all happened, defund the FBI. I swear to God, she says that. All right. A couple of other tweets I picked up. Tommy Lauren, who's another far right like commentator. If these snakes think the raid on Trump is going to somehow make his supporters turn against him, they are as stupid, all caps, as we thought. This is only going to cause the MAGA movement to dig in deeper. We see you, and we see how slimy and disgusting you are trying to weaponize the FBI. We have Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida. The raid of Trump's resort is another escalation in the weaponization of federal agencies against the regime's political opponents. While people like Hunter Biden get treated with kid gloves, now the regime is getting another 87,000 IRS agents to wield against its adversaries. Banana Republic! Mm-hmm. And then we have, let's see, I got a couple other ones here. Steven Crowder, far-right commentator, tomorrow is war. Sleep well. Yikes.
Oh my God.
And then Rand Paul. The FBI raid on President Trump was approved by Director Ray, who also claimed that the illegal FISA warrants used to spy on Trump were constitutional. Today's raid is outrageous and unjust, but predictable. Now, one more thing I got to share. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, former press conference spokesperson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. She tweeted, something like that. If you're not yet appalled by the total abuse of power from Democrats in Washington, you're not paying attention. Also, I don't have the tweet, but in 2016, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said something to the effect of, if the FBI is raiding you, then you're probably guilty of doing something, meaning like you're probably on the wrong side of all this.
Right,
And then my final thing I'll share, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she tweeted an upside down American flag, which is like the sign for distress.
Wow.
And dude, I saw someone retweet it and they said, so when's Marjorie Taylor going to start kneeling for the anthem? Ha 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 ha! I mean, that is just watching their response, right? I mean, listen, I want to be clear about something. First off, we're not a news source. So I recommend reading, you know, actual legitimate news sources. You can read Sharon Says So. You can read, is it Moshes? Is that his name? Mosh on Instagram?
Sounds right.
I got to find his account so I don't mispronounce it. I already did. And then, of course, you know, other, you know, there's New York Times. There's a bunch of them. A bunch of other ones that you can look into. Yeah, Mosh. M-O-S-H-E-H. So you can go to his account as well. Etc. But I say all this because it's a very unprecedented time to see what's happening in the response. Like, yes, we understand that the FBI executing a search warrant is unprecedented for a former president. But again, Trump is not a typical president.
Sure.
And I think we have to also acknowledge here that... you know, I lost my train of thought on where I was going with this.
Well, they did actually catch him with stolen confidential documents, right? If I remember correctly.
I don't know all the details, and I don't want to say something that isn't fully the case, right?
Sure.
But I do. I'll put it this way: for a judge to sign off on a search warrant, especially of the former president and an FBI director who was appointed by Donald Trump,
right,
to sign off on that, something has to be up, right? And this whole idea of like, oh, this is Biden's FBI. Not really. Like, just because Biden's the president doesn't mean that somehow it's necessarily his FBI, especially considering that the director of the FBI is a Trump appointee. But this is what I should back up. I didn't expect the pushback to be this blatant, but it just is like, there's no principle here. Like, what is the principle? Are you for law and order, or are you against it? Are you for funding the police, or are you against the funding the police? Like, it just seems like, depending on the situation, as long as it benefits them, they're for those things. But once the no one's above the law applies to their autocrat, right? Trump, right?
Sure.
Too far. This is political warfare. Like, what? It's bonkers to me.
Well, I think that what we can really take away from this event is that Trump truly is the most persecuted president in all of history.
Amen. Amen, brother. But I will hold a prayer vigil for him.
It's absolutely bizarre. Because again, it's like you said, it's the same people with the Thin Blue Line sticker on the back of their truck, you know? That protested the Black Lives Matter movement for suggesting that we should defund the police.
Right.
That are raiding the Capitol building, that are assaulting police officers, that are calling now to defund the FBI. It's so selective, you know? There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's just a defense of my own personal beliefs above anything else, and everything should bow to that.
It just continues to reinforce for me anyway. That in particular, the people in political power who espouse these views are really concerned about power and control and not integrity, not principle, not even conservative values. I mean, I remember when, like, you know, the Conservative Party was the party that stood for fiscal responsibility, whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
And it just seems like more and more, it's not about any of that. It's about maintaining power and control in a very authoritarian way. I mean, that's what it comes down to the point where this... you know, search warrant happens, and the response by sitting politicians is prepare for war, right? Yeah. Is defund the FBI. It's like, what? I mean, I don't know. Listen, I don't want to rant too much about this because we talk about Christian nationalism very often. We cover it a lot in our stories and in our podcast interviews, but I'm still trying to solve that Rubik's Cube of like what motivates MTG, right? Marjorie Taylor Greene. Like how in her head, how does she reconcile these inconsistencies? I just want to know. Like, forget how I think about it or how I view it. I just want to know how in her mind she rationalizes speaking at Nick Fuentes, action committee, he's a blatant anti-Semitic white supremacist.
Sure.
She spoke there and then defended it, right? And then she claims to be a Jesus follower. But then she's like saying things that are not Christ-like at all, and her political viewpoints don't line up at all with the Sermon on the Mount. I just don't understand. That's all. And that's more than anything, that's what frustrates me. I mean, people frustrate me when they say stupid stuff about Christian nationalism, right? Like, you know, America should be a Christian nation. But if I understand why they believe that, I'm not bending my mind as much to try and figure it out. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know. And that's kind of like for myself, a lot of my attitude towards this whole thing has shifted from like the initial shock and anger to just like a weird, twisted fascination almost of like, yes. Where is this even? How did we? What in the, you know, because right. even growing up, you know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, I grew up homeschooled. I grew up in a very conservative home. But even in that, we were taught, you know, that, well, there's this certain, you know, fringe segment of conservative Christianity, which suggests that America needs to be a Christian nation. They believe that all the founding fathers were, you know, like hardcore Christians, all this, and that America is like the new Israel. And I was taught that that was like this kind of fringe segment and that it was dangerous, you know? And for now that to be twisted around to be the mainstream and to be accepted is just, you know, I keep using the word bizarre, but I just don't have a better word for it. It's just like, what in the hell? You know, how did we get here?
That's our limited homeschooled vocabulary speaking. Yeah. Right? Like I feel like what I'm feeling in my head, I don't have words to accurately describe. And it's also interesting because like in my interview with Samuel Perry, you know, it's not like 85% of evangelicals are Marjorie Taylor Greene, right?
Right.
About 20% are. But they're incredibly powerful. And the other like 35 or 40% of white evangelicals accommodate it, like meaning they don't see it as a threat.
They're not doing anything to distance themselves from it.
Right. So like in one way, it is fringe, but in another way, it's a very... it's a very powerful fringe that's well funded that got, for example, Roe v. Wade overturned. But also, it is accommodated by another third of evangelicals who say, "Well, it's not that big of a deal
because deep down, it's like palatable in that culture."
Exactly, and so it is like. I mean, you know, even before New Evangelicals, I was podcasting about this, just saying a lot of the same things. Where it's, I just don't know how you read the Sermon on the Mount. And then you say, oh, yeah, Christian nationalism. Yeah. Like, clearly, we need more guns in the country. We need less health care. Democrats are just destroying everything. Like, this comes from somewhere else. It's not coming from the gospel accounts. It's not even coming from many thoughts in the Christian tradition.
Sure.
But it's coming from somewhere. And it's a very weird combination. But anyway,
I can go down my historical rant for hours about Constantine and all of that, but you know,
the poor audience is like, Tim, oh my God, Tim, shut up. Like we've heard this already. I know. I'm sorry. Thank you for listening. But anyway, I just wanted to draw attention to the connection between, because I was thinking about this, right? Like, I don't get it. Why this defense of Trump? Well, again, what did evangelicalism teach them? Never surrender, never admit wrongdoing. You can never be held accountable because accountability means you were wrong. If you were wrong, it means you weren't standing on absolute truth.
Yeah.
If you're not standing on absolute truth, that means what were you believing in the first place? Oh my God, what is my faith, right? It's all rooted in this belief of I have an objective view of the world and no one else does. So they can't admit that they were wrong because it would go against their perception that they're standing on objective truth.
Sure, which kind of...
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Leads into this other conversation, and we've talked about this before. About
come on, how good am I getting? How good am I getting at those transitions?
It was so smooth. I knew exactly where you were going with that. None of this is scripted, but I was like, I know where we're heading here.
Wink, wink.
Which is that where we kind of end up taking that, right? This idea of defending the faith, protecting it from the evil, secular, godless world around us, having a perfect answer, you know, grounded in absolute truth for every question to establish that we have all the right answers for everything. And you posted a reel, a week ago, responding to Alyssa Childers and Frank Turek.
Yeah.
That I thought was really interesting to this conversation. Are we able to share that audio here? How feasible is that?
I could do that. If you can stall, I can do that. So
I can stall. All right. What am I going to stall about? Well, I think that I would still love, and I know we talked about this ad nauseum, and you've made a lot of efforts to make this happen, but I have so much interest in having a conversation with Alyssa Childers about some of these things, because I've consumed her content obsessively for a couple years now. Again, similarly to the Christian nationalism conversation with a kind of like weird, twisted fascination of like, how did we get here? Like, why is this sort of where we're grounding things and placing our flag now?
Totally.
And so I think that, and it's continued to develop too. For anyone that's in the audience that's read her book, Another Gospel, something Progressive Christianity title, I've read it 3-4 times now. I keep reading it again because I keep trying to understand it. And I keep coming away frustrated because I feel like it continues to give these very stock answers to everything. It doesn't actually say anything of substance. And that's kind of where this video is going to go that we are going to chat about here. And I'm looking for things to stall about.
I'm ready.
Ready? All right, let's do it. I'm going to stop babbling.
So here's the video. Here we go. Listen up.
You winsomely and convincingly address professing Christians who belittle apologetics. I run into this all the time, Frank, in Progressive Christianity and Deconstruction.
Number two, why don't we keep this plan up where we lose 75% of our kids as soon as they leave the home by not equipping them with evidence, by not equipping them with the truth? I mean,
hi, deconstructing, maybe Progressive Christian here. I don't know. I just want to try and help you out. Have you ever considered that maybe the reason you're losing 75% of young people is because your dogmatic apologetics and theology does not make room for other people's lived experience in reality? And so when young people indoctrinated in your apologetic actually experience the real world, they can't reconcile the two and have to find better answers than the one you gave them? And have you ever considered that maybe the reason it's so hard for people like me to take you seriously is because you speak at places like Charlie Kirk's Pastor Summit? Charlie Kirk is a propagandist who does not believe in reality, yet I'm supposed to take you seriously about your objective truth claims. It makes no sense. That's why so many of us have walked away.
There you go.
There we go.
There it is.
There you have it.
Now, that was taken, if you go to Alyssa Childers' Instagram, you can see the full clip. It's about a 3-minute clip with her and Dr. Frank Turek. And the reason why I picked that clip is because of two things. Number one, like I said in the video, Dr. Frank Turek is a leading apologist who's also speaking at Charlie Kirk's Pastor Summit, which actually starts today as of this recording.
Oh, wow.
And we've covered Charlie Kirk at length, and I'm not going to go through it again, but he is a blatant propagandist, I would argue fascist at this point, in his thinking. So it's like, okay, wait, you're telling me that you make a living defending, you know, the Christian faith and grounding it in objective reality, yet, like, okay, speaking at Charlie Kirk's Pastor Summit, I mean, how do these things work for you? And the other reason why I wanted to pick it up is because, you know, listen, I have talked to Alyssa Childers privately. We talked for almost 2 hours because her and Tim Barnett are writing a book on deconstruction. And they reached out to say, could we talk to you? I said, I would absolutely love to talk to you. I'm totally open to dialogue. And at the end of it, first off, let me just say, full transparency, the conversation went really well. We had a really great dialogue. And at the end of it, you know, Alyssa was like, hey, maybe we can talk more on the podcast. I said, that would be great. And I said, I'll wait to hear from you. A month later, Tim Barnett takes one of my tweets and he has this account called Red Pen Logic. He Red Pen Logics it. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of annoying because we talked already, but whatever. And then since then, I have not heard from Alyssa. Like, it's been, when did we, maybe 7 months now, 8 months?
That was around Christmas time or something, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, around like January-ish. So I haven't heard from her since. And so she is so passionate about like exposing the quote-unquote false gospel of progressive Christianity while Christian nationalism runs amok in her spaces. I mean, she's like I said, she's hosting Dr. Frank Turek, who's speaking at Charlie Kirk's propaganda machine for pastors. So I just find this whole apologetics lane becoming more and more uncredible for me as I see who they platform, who they hang with, and also what they're espousing.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that was so interesting to me. And I went and watched that whole clip last night too. And how quickly Frank goes to this idea of, well, people are leaving. So many of the youth are leaving because we just haven't given them the right answers. We haven't hit them with the right fact, which is going to change their life. And yeah. I just, you know, again, as someone, I'll share my experience as someone that was homeschooled that spent so much time digesting these apologetics ministries work, you know, totally. Rabbi Zacharias, yes. Sean McDowell, yep.
Lee Strobel,
for Christ, Lee Strobel. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, you know, everybody in this field, R.C. Sproul, I was reading all of those books. I was watching Ken Ham, all the documentaries, all the DVDs, all the talks, the debates, everything. And none of that was effective in stopping me from reprocessing my faith and, you know, rediscovering it in a completely different context. You know, those were actually some of the things that encouraged me to do that because I thought that these, you know, objective answers were so unsatisfying that as soon as I stepped out into the world around me and started building relationships with people that didn't look exactly like me, those answers just fell flat on their face. They didn't actually explain anything about the world I was experiencing.
Exactly. No, I mean, you're completely on the money. I very much like you, Noah. I've read the Ravi Zacharias books. I listened to his podcast every day. Was it called Just Thinking or something like that?
Something like that.
I read Case for Christ. I knew who Sean McDowell was. I would watch debates. I just think, I don't think Frank's like a bad guy. I don't think that he's like, oh,
sure.
You know, I don't think he has bad intentions, but he can't see the forest from the trees. Like, Frank, many of us are not leaving because you did not give us the right answers. We got your answers loud and clear. Like, we have them. Okay. But like you said, Noah, when we met a gay person and it turns out they weren't this crazy, horrible, evil, you know, like sexually abusive pervert. Yeah. They were just a normal human being trying to live in the world and love people. You go, wait a second, that doesn't compute with what
I was taught about
the queer community, right? Yeah. Or when you meet an atheist and like they're nice and they're moral and they love their kids, right? And it turns out they love them more than what you've seen some people in your church, how they love their kids, right?
You see more morality from the atheist than the pastors, like that.
But what have you been told? Well, atheists have no true moral grounding. It's impossible. Atheists or whatever. It's like it doesn't work. And then what they'll do is they'll say, well, experience is, you know, it isn't always truth. And I would say, listen,
the heart is deceitful above all things, Tim.
Right. And I understand the spirit behind that, right?
Sure.
Because sometimes if we live in certain bubbles, right, where our perception is reality, it might not reflect the broader reality. I understand that. But that's why you need experience and data. That's why you need both. And experience plays a big role. And then when you find out that it turns out, you know, many atheists have whatever some of the stats might be, you know, they're just as loving, their divorce rates are the same as Christians. You start thinking like, well, okay, my experience and now some of my data is telling me that morally, there really isn't a massive difference between the two, even though I was taught that there is like a night and day difference between the moral Christian and the godless atheist. I'm using this as an example, just to draw attention to how the apologetics industry fed me a lot of stuff that ultimately I found not really a valid, the answer did not hold up over time.
Right. And I think what's interesting about that, too, is when I went back and because I pressed on that really hard, when I kind of went out and started having those experiences, I went back to those apologetic sources and I was like, well, what about this?
Yeah.
And what I saw consistently again and again, you know, even if the question was like, hey, what if our theology is maybe we're reading this verse wrong because it's obviously causing harm to so many people to interpret it this way. And if Jesus, you know, says he comes to give us full and abundant life. You know, that maybe we're doing something wrong. Maybe the fruit of this tree is bad and we need to reconsider the way we're reading this.
Right.
The response that I got from so many people in that apologetic community with those kind of questions was, well, it's not my opinion. We can't change it. It's God's objective word to us. And the association wasn't even just the text itself, but my interpretation is objectively the way God meant for this verse to be read. There's no ground room for questioning that.
Right.
And it was, I learned this term a little while ago. I saw on Facebook. I thought it was so perfectly put as a thought terminating cliche, as something where we say where it just shuts down a conversation because there's not enough logic to it to even continue that conversation. You're not being fed enough to press any deeper.
Mm.
And that's been kind of my experience of this phrase that, well, it's not my opinion, Tim. It's God's word. You know, if it causes harm, you know, I don't know what to do about that because this is just how we're supposed to be, you know, and I think that that's my frustration with, you know, much of the apologetics world is that we kind of end up landing at that grounding point.
Yeah.
And there's just, it feels like there's nowhere to go from there. If you're not willing to even question, maybe I'm reading this wrong. I'm not even talking about the inerrancy debate, just purely like maybe my biases are sinking in too deep and the way in which I'm choosing to interpret this is causing harm and I should consider that. It's that accountability thing we talked about, but it's giving up too much. We're losing too much ground to just ask those questions.
Yes. So I didn't plan on sharing this. It didn't really come to mind. But since we're talking about it, I think we have a few minutes left before we have to maybe, you know, end the episode. But okay, I'm going to flesh out a current thought I'm still thinking through. So audience, you know, I just asked for a little bit of grace here. But I'm kind of, this is like a new thought I'm still wrestling through. I've been thinking about how... we were kind of taught that, like, the Bible and how God is portrayed in the Bible is a static reality that is happening now. All right? Meaning, like you read the Bible and that's how God is, that's how he was, that's how he will be, period. Right? And so we use the Bible to determine how God is working today in a very hyper literalistic way, right? So in our culture audience, as you, I'm sure many of you have grown up like us, you realize that it's not just the Bible, it's a specific interpretation of the Bible, right? It's certain verses taken very literally. But that the idea, though, is, you know, God's the same today, yesterday, and forever. So I've been thinking about this. I've been talking to Trip Fuller a little bit about this, and I've been reading a book by Rabbi Mike Harvey called A Jew Speaks to Christians, which has been very helpful for me. And I also discovered, thanks to my friend Mason, this theologian named Ilya Delio. Hope I said it correctly. And between the three different things I've been reading, I've had some new thoughts that I'm working through. So these are not new truths. These are just things I'm thinking through that are subject to change. But it seems like, based on what we know about science and how the universe works, the universe is expanding and unfolding, and it's still in process, right? It's still moving out somewhere. And I was talking to Tripp, and I was like, you know, even in the Bible, how God is portrayed evolves over time. Like, how God deals with Adam and Eve is different than how God deals with Abram, which is different than how God deals with the Israelites, which is different than how he deals with Moses and giving them the law, which is different than how God, through in the incarnation, works with his disciples. And then that's different than how the Holy Spirit, right, works at the day of Pentecost, etc. There, even in the Bible, it shows some type of expansion. Okay, I mean, Tim Mackey talks about it like God's blessing is expanding from first the Jew, then to the Gentile.
Sure.
And I've been thinking about, like, how I was taught that as long as we read the Bible, we'll have all the answers we need about God. And while I certainly believe that the Bible, despite its complicated history that, you know, we can spend a lot of time on, I still think there's certainly quite a lot of wisdom about how God functions, and certainly it can be a very helpful just texts and collections of books for how humanity can function, etc. However,
sure.
I mispronounced her name. I'm so sorry. Ilya Delio. I just discovered her. She holds a PhD in science and in theology. Okay, and she talks about how science can really inform how we understand what God is. And I'm really going to butcher some of this, so forgive me, audience, but I recommend checking her out. She has a great talk you can get on an audiobook. And she does an interview with Pete Enns from last year that maybe we can put in the show notes, Noah, to help them.
Yeah,
but essentially awesome. What she says is that science can help us understand how God functions. And she says that we really view God through the Newtonian lens. God is black and white. It's right or wrong. God will punish you or he'll bless you, etc. But she said, as we're discovering about how the universe works and how some of Newton's maybe theories were not correct, that can inform what actually is at the center of reality. And her whole concept is that quantum mechanics and physics can help us understand who and what God is. And essentially what she says in this interview with Pete and Jared is that we've discovered that matter is like, it's all interconnected. And she talks about what's called quantum entanglement. Now, listen, I'm so over my head here. But the general idea is that particles can be separated over long, big, vast lengths of space. And if one particle is touched, the other one gets affected automatically. They don't know how yet, as far as I know. But for example, if in theory you reverse the spin of one particle in New Jersey, that particle that is connected through quantum entanglement, past the Milky Way galaxy, will also start reversing its spin automatically. Okay, this is crazy stuff. And she also talks about how they've done experiments and they realized that even someone observing particles being passed through, slits, essentially she talks about, I'm so butchering this, I'm sorry. But if you throw beams of light particles Okay,
this neither is of us were scientists in another life.
No, I'm literally trying to explain quantum mechanics based on a homeschool level education.
I'm of no help to you here.
But my only point is that she says this is that they've observed that if someone's observing how particles go through two pieces of like a space, mm-hmm. those particles behave differently if they're being observed. Right. Versus if they're not being observed, which yeah. is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
And so anyway, she says all this, I'm like, and she talks about how we understand this impacts how we understand God and how our view of God needs to continue to shift as we discover new things about how the universe functions. And her yeah. point that blew my mind is that the universe is unfolding like a scroll. And therefore, what if God is unfolding like with us? Right? Like what if this process and if everything's interconnected, God is not matter, right? But God is in the matter and God right. is in us. And like, there's this whole consciousness thing that she talks about. But anyway,
that's a beautiful thought.
It is beautiful. And then last thing that blew my mind, an audience, sit down for this one. She talks about how because of that quantum entanglement I just discussed where, you know, if you reverse the spin on one particle here, a million light years later, that piece that's connected to it will reverse its spin. She talks about how she kind of hints that, like, you know, maybe that's why prayer can work. The idea of mm-hmm. like how we alter our own bodies and our thoughts actually can change other things that are connected to those yep. thoughts. And I was like, holy moly, because I've always been someone who's like, I don't want to be superstitious anymore, right? But like, sure. it can't just all be logical and just like, right. oh, well, there's no prayer, it doesn't exist. And yeah. this was like a mind-blowing moment of like, what if the language that we have for prayer is us interacting with matter and time right. and space and actually affecting things because of how entangled we all are together.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I just finished a book about this actually called The
you
Power
did?
Of Eight. Yeah, I literally yesterday.
No.
And it was
look
fascinating.
At God. There it is.
Yeah, exactly. There's our God moment of the podcast right there. Hashtag blessed.
Well, are but you going to yeah, tell? Yeah, tell me something.
It's,
help
it's,
me.
Well, I'm still processing the whole thing too, but it's that same thing that our observation of matter actually fundamentally changes it in some way. And the breadth of scientific studies that have confirmed this. And again, I'm trying to be so cautious with even how I voice this because I'm still learning about it. I'm still thinking through how I even feel about it.
Right.
But conceptually, I think it is such a beautiful way to process the idea of God. And even that idea that, well, you know, the argument is, well, God doesn't change. But what if, you know, but God is objectively bigger than any concept we can attach to God. So God
right.
continuing to reveal, to unfold for us, logically seems inevitable in some way.
Yes.
And, you know, even the, you know, I saw this meme, and I'm not going to knock him because it's one of my favorite meme pages, but it was somebody saying, you know, I wish God would speak to me, and then somebody was pointing at a Bible. It was like, haha, gotcha.
I know what,
and
what,
I was
what
like,
page you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love him, so I'm not going to call
right.
him out,
yeah,
but
yeah.
but I saw this, and I was like, guys, because, you know, even like the Bible, the, you know, there's this promise where Jesus says, after I leave, the Holy Spirit's going to come and lead you into all truth. And I think that that's such a mysterious and beautiful idea that there's a continual unfolding of knowledge of God being revealed through relationship.
Yes.
And so I think we, just to kind of drive it home from like even a biblical, you know, perspective that way, or not, even though I don't even like using that language anymore.
Right.
But to say like that, that's like, should be something fundamental to what all Christians hope and believe, is that there's this unfolding knowledge of God that's being revealed through relationship. And I love that how
yes.
we can just kind of see the scientific glue maybe behind that.
Yes.
And kind of peek behind the curtain to see there's something fundamental about the way the universe is functioning, which kind of maybe shows us this, you know?
Yes. And maybe just a final thought.
Yeah.
I think what that means for me right now in my own journey of faith, right? Because I'm in process with all of you
yeah.
out there, just kind of working through my own faith tradition and what do I do going forward. That really helps me put the Bible in a really healthy place. Where it's like, okay, you know, maybe the divine really spoke this way in this
right.
moment for these people. And maybe there's some real wisdom here, right? There's some ancient wisdom that is worth really thinking about. And then what do we do with that in our cultural moment, right? Because we're not living in the first century, right? Or second century.
Yeah.
We're living in 2022 and we have different challenges. So it's this weird tension of, I think we can use the past to inform our future and also use science as we know it now and as it continues to discover more things to help us understand understand what is actually happening, right? And what that does for me is it turns my mentality from one of fear of, do I know the objective truth about God,
right,
to almost like a, well, the divine is holding my hand and I'm kind of exploring this with God, right? Yeah. Like the universe is so big and so complicated and so mysterious, and there's something kind of beautiful about that explorer hat as opposed to the hard hat to protect me from the wrong thing falling on my head, right? And that has shifted my whole posture towards God, the Bible, the Christian tradition, Jesus, because I'm realizing, like, I think personally at this point, it is a fool's errand to look at the Bible and say, well, the one that we have now is God's objective words, quote unquote, right, to us. That argument fell apart a long time ago, but I didn't know what to replace it with, right?
Right.
And now as I'm discovering some of the Trip 4 or, I'm going to butcher her name again, Ilia Delio and others. I mean, there's many others out there.
Yeah.
But they're helping me kind of reconcile some of these thoughts and thinking about God in different and new ways, which, by the way, is normal, okay? God was thought about in a new way when the Holy Spirit dropped at Pentecost. So this idea that we can't continue to uncover as the universe expands and unfolds, it doesn't help anyone, right? So anyway, it's a very freeing thought, but that I hope I explained something decently to the audience, because I know I kind of fumbled so much, but that's just kind of where I'm at right now, thinking through those things. I don't have any places I've landed. I'm certainly not going to teach this stuff anytime soon, but I'm certainly just thinking about like how God interacts now and how science can help inform that.
Yeah, I know. And maybe to wrap that up on my end, I think that the way that I've kind of conceptualized that, you know, the tradition that I grew up with in evangelicalism, the emphasis was on you have to know and believe the right set of objective facts before you die to turn out okay.
Yes.
You know, that was sort of, and that's where that anxiety came from, because what if I believe the wrong facts?
Yes.
And this thing that you're presenting and that, you know, I've kind of been coming around to as well is this beautiful idea of what if the goal is just relationship?
Right.
You know, and to walk through that journey of learning and growing eternally. You know, I'm a big fan of C.S. Lewis's work, and he describes kind of this coming to the other side, however you want to interpret that, and the way that one of the characters voices it is further up and further in, that it's a never-ending journey into deeper experience and a relationship with something or someone.
Right, and the center of that glue is love.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the whole centering framework of the whole universe that holds and binds everything together, which is, again, 1 Corinthians, if you want to get all biblical with it. But,
right. There's wisdom there for sure.
Yeah. And so I think that's a really beautiful way to move forward, and, you know, something that makes me really excited and gives me a lot of peace, too, about my spiritual journey,
even when I
have hella questions, man.
Yes.
I don't know shit.
The questions make me excited now instead of scaring me.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh, new questions to think about, right?
Right.
So, anyway, I mean, listen, again, two homeschooled people trying to unpack quantum mechanics and I guess we would call it process theology in some way. So certainly, friends, don't take our word for it. Please look up the sources that we gave you.
Don't cite us in your academic paper about quantum physics. God, no.
I'm just you know, I'm honestly with you, Noah, just processing some thoughts out loud. But, you know, okay, anyway, so we covered a lot today. I don't want to belabor our time here. Last thing I'll mention, and then we're going to wrap up, is we are going to Trip Fuller's Beer Camp, speaking of God Pod
Please
Edition.
Come.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, you can get tickets in our show notes. If you type in TNE, you get $50 off of our show note. Wow, I am just, whoo.
We're selling show notes now.
Yes, we're selling our show notes, yeah.
You want the link? You got to pay up, buddy.
you get $50 off your ticket. So make sure you do that. Type in TNE in the checkout. You know, Noah, the thought that we have right now that I don't know how many people who listen to this actually engage with us a whole lot, but we're debating, because you're in Pennsylvania, I'm in New Jersey. We have to go south of North Carolina to go to beer camp. And the debate we're having right now is, do we road trip down and meet some people along the way from the community, or do we just grab a flight and call it a day? I mean, pro to flights is that I think overall it'd be a little bit cheaper, it'd be way less time, but pros to road tripping is it's road tripping, and also we could meet some cool people from the community, which could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm torn.
Yeah, I have no idea how to answer that question. We've been going back and forth on this for weeks, honestly, trying to figure it out. But you pitched the idea the other day of like, well, what if we met some people from the community? And nothing would make me more excited. So
same. I honestly, like, every time I travel, anytime, I always try and put a call out on Instagram. Like, hey, I'm going to be in the area. Anyone want to meet up? I I'm a very relational person. I love meeting people, especially people who engage with us. So anytime to make that, to have an excuse to do that, I'm in. I mean, well, so here's, I guess, our first call. Anyone out there? If we're going to pass through, I guess we're going to pass through Virginia, going to pass through Delaware, Maryland, et cetera, to get down to North Carolina, let us know. We're going to be in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. That's where the beer pod thing is happening. So you can send us an email or DM us or something. But if you're in the area and it's on the way, it might be worth it. So let us know for sure.
Look up somebody, MapQuest our route and figure out what highway we're going to be on and
set it up. I got to say, this podcast went better than every time we talk. I'm like, well, I guess we'll start here and see where it goes. And before you know, we're talking about quantum mechanics. So
exactly. Not where I expected my morning to go, but no, I'm okay with it.
Well, you have to record a band for work. I have some other stuff to handle on my end. So we'll cut this one off here. But Noah, as always, a great time. And audience, thanks for listening. Thanks for following. If you want to support our work, you can donate. Link in the show notes or on Instagram. And of course, you can share this episode and give us a rating and review. We'll talk to you all next time. Goodbye.
See ya.